November, December board meeting of the Montgomery County Hospital District. Can I have the call to order, please?
Oh, you want the?
Yeah.
Robert Hudson?
I'm out of line.
I thought you were.
I apologize.
It's okay.
I apologize. I'm going to do the invocation, Mr. Bagley's going to do the pledge. Everybody stand, please. Dear God, we ask you to be with us today as we discuss the business of the district. Lord, we ask you to be with us that we would make good and wise decisions. We thank you and praise you, Lord, for these fine people that are here today and that work at this district to save lives and bring comfort to our community. We ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
All right. Now, we'll do the roll call.
Okay. Robert Hudson?
Here.
Charles Shirley?
Here.
Kelly Inman is absent. Chris Griss?
I'm here.
Chris Grice? Jackie Williams here?
I've been called worse.
Jason, I know, right? Me too. Jason Walker's absent. Bob Bagley?
Here.
All right. Any public comment? All right. Special recognitions.
Although he couldn't be here today, we want to honor Chad Thacker for his 25 years of service in our radio department. We're very glad he's still here. He does a lot for the community as well as our organization. So we'll give him this award.
Good afternoon. We have two Employee of the Month, and since it's November, December, we had really, really great nominations, which always makes it tough to pick. So we'll get started with the winners that we did choose for November, December. The first one I will read, it says, I would like to nominate Sean Karski for Employee of the Month. Medic 31 arrived on scene with fire department personnel. Upon arrival, it was noted that the patient was leaving the scene on a bicycle. This must be in East County, because that's what tends to happen, though. Medic 31 on bicycles. Medic 31 and the fire department personnel ambulated down a driveway to speak with the calling party and the circumstances of the incident. After speaking with the female on scene, EMS and the fire department personnel were walking down the driveway back to the unit. It was noted by the fire department personnel that there was a pit bull aggressively running towards EMS and the fire department personnel. Everyone began running towards the unit for safety. While running, an EMS crew member fell down to the ground, at which time the dog jumped on top of her. Seeing that, Sean began to run back towards the dog, screaming and waving to distract the dog in an attempt to save the crew member from harm. As a result, the dog began to run towards Sean and in the process bit Sean. Sean displayed bravery and selflessness in order to save another crew member from harm. If it wasn't for his actions, the incident could have been much worse. Without concern for his own safety, thinking only for protecting the crew, Sean took action and was injured. He truly showed bravery and selflessness and extreme compassion for him and his crew members. Sean set the bar pretty high and is deserving of this commendation. Congratulations, Sean. He is okay. Sean is okay, so congratulations. Sean is not here, so we will save this and then I'll read the second nomination.
He didn't require a rabies
shot, did he? That's HIPAA, sir. I can't share that. No, just kidding. He is doing okay, though.
Excuse me.
He's doing all right. That's pretty brave, jump in front of a pit bull for your crew members. Pretty awesome. This next nomination is from Deputy Chief Chris Goodrich. He said, over this past weekend, so this was over the holidays, it's shift bid time, if you remember from last board meeting, EMS operations was actively working on the 2026 shift bid, and I needed information regarding the newly promoted in-charge paramedics to ensure they had an opportunity to bid. I asked Ms. Amy Sewell if she had the information readily available. Unknown if she did or did not, on her weekend off, she compiled the list and dates that I needed without hesitation. This is consistent behavior from Ms. Amy. Without being told to do so, I would like to recognize Amy for consistently demonstrating outstanding teamwork and a helpful attitude. She is always willing to lend a hand, share knowledge, and support others to ensure the team's success. Whether it's with covering a shift or helping new employees learn the ropes, Amy approaches every situation with positivity and professionalism. Amy's commitment to teamwork and willingness to go above and beyond make a noticeable difference in our daily operations and create a better work environment for everyone. Amy truly embodies what it means to be dependable and a supportive team player. Thank you for your continued dedication to our core values of accountability, compassion, excellence, innovation, integrity, and unity. Congratulations, Amy. Well done.
Chief, you ain't gonna keep that one.
All right, that's all we have.
All right. Mr. Johnson, you got the CEO report?
Okay, just to. Oh, we've got a new.
You don't need that anymore.
So, as y'all know, they spent the last month reworking or rebuilding or replacing or doing all that stuff, systems that we can communicate with each other. So, hopefully, you can hear me better.
Oh, a whole lot better.
Yeah, a lot better.
Okay. Or maybe that's not so good. I don't know. Anyway, a couple of brief notes that I'll reiterate for the minutes. This month, we spent a lot of time working looking at ways to either acquire Station 13 or to do something else in the area in the event that we can't buy the station. We're very hopeful that we can, and we've got some time to buy the station, as it will be a while before the new station is built, but we do need to get on that, and we will. Laserfish, we've talked about. One of the problems we have now is I think our Laserfish team has done a great job of coordinating our records and making the system much more workable for us. There's still a lot of work to be done, but they're doing a great job. Meanwhile, in doing that, we are accumulating a lot of storage, and we are accumulating a lot of cost to manage that storage. And so that's a concern that I have for the future, because it's only going to grow. So we've started looking at how can we really reduce the records that we're storing to either those that we feel we have to have or those that are minimally required or to the minimal time required by either state or federal law. So we've been going through that. Donna's been working on that. And Sean and her team in Laserfish, I think, have some methodology that they can use to help us make sure that we're getting rid of records whenever the time date for the Texas State Library or for federal standards mandates that we can do so. So we're going to work on that to make sure we're not keeping records any longer than possible, because the storage fees in the cloud is expensive. We're working on EMS stations. We've got four going on, and I'm stealing some of Melissa's thunder. Station 13 in Willis will be, it's sort of ready to go. We'll be moving in this month. I'm sorry.
Not 13.
Yeah, Station 13. Station 13 is not at all ready to go. Station 16 on Calvary Road, mid-December, so we'll be moving in next week, I think. Station 24, which is located in the Woodlands, it's a rebuild of a station that we were in. It's now in the bus parking area in the back of the Woodlands. It's being rebuilt. It's a very nice station. It's going to open by the end of 2025, the 2025 year end. A note to the board members, the station grand opening will be Saturday, January 31st from 1 until 4, with a formal program beginning at 4, from 4 to 5. Board members are invited guests. Pardon? 14th. Okay, what are the times?
The formal program begins at 2 p.m.
The formal program begins at 2 p.m. He didn't have his spear thing on. Okay. We're still continuing to work on accounting and procurement. Accounting's driving Shannon crazy, but she's doing a great job getting us on task there. And we had the annual awards banquet last weekend. Unfortunately, I was not able to attend, but I understand it was very well done and people had a good time. goals over the next 90 days. We want to get this, will this property nailed down one way or the other so that we can get to moving on our plans for Willis in the future. I'm going to be meeting with each of the departments to interview supervisors and department managers to better make sure that we're coordinating our services and we're keeping up with what needs to be done in all our different departments. Record storage is a big thing, as we mentioned, and I hope to have that process in full gear by the end of the next 90 days. That's my report. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Okay. Chief Campbell?
Yes, sir, Mr. Grice. In the last month in November, we completed Q4 CE, which wraps up our last large training session of the year. The training focused on mental health awareness and education, which was provided by Alana Snell. She's the lead counselor at Grayson Guidance. She did a great job each day providing a one-hour education and training for all of us in EMS, and it was well-received, and it was good timing. We had some airway training, we had some clinical updates, and we're looking forward to what DCS and the Education Department are going to roll out next year for education. On November 18th, we went live with RightSight, which is our telehealth provider. We've kind of did like a restaurant, like a soft launch or a soft opening where they're taking low priority non-emergency calls from the call taker where they could qualify to speak with a physician immediately. And that prevents that call from even getting dispatched. So we believe that we can, once we get fully operational, about 10 calls a day that could be answered by RightSight Monday through Friday during the times that they're open. So for us, if we can get 10 calls kind of out of the EMS system a day, that's one ambulance worth of call volume approximately. So we'll see how this program goes over the next quarter and if we need to make adjustments as it continues to unfold. Everybody did a great job with ShiftBid. It's a big lift every year, especially as we continue to grow. So where is everybody going to live next year? That's just about wrapped up, just a few little loose ends to sort out before we go live in January. And Chief Seek and the team, really all the departments are planning what we're going to do in 2026. With the big focus on what our deployment model is going to look like with the expansion of four units and a squad. We're excited to announce that Chief Curry, April Curry, she's been a district chief for many years. She promoted to the deputy chief position, so we'll go to three deputy chiefs, and they'll work a nine-day rotation, moving them to 24 hours, which expands our leadership presence in the field. We're really excited for that position, and congratulations to Chief Curry. And that completes my report. If you have any questions, please let me know.
Thank you. Any questions? Miller.
Good afternoon. Randy stole most of my thunder, but our plan is to move into Station 16 on this coming Sunday, December 14th. They've worked through most of the issues that they found, as you always find things when you have a new home or a place to live, and they've been able to correct those issues, and so we feel confident that December 14th is a good date to move in. We have the walkthrough punch list on December 11th for Station 24 in the Woodlands. And demo is underway at Station 46. Our substantial completion for that station is August 7th with move-in on August 12th. And there's pictures.
Doesn't look good.
Huh?
Doesn't look good.
That
look
demo good. Doesn't look good. In radio, the week of December 15th, the MCHD project team is going to meet with associated vendors to plan out the remainder of the radio projects for fiscal year 26. Shelter replacement, DC power sources, and VHF projects, because they have to coordinate those because it's all the same people doing them, and different, some of the vendors are the same, so we want to get the best for our money by scheduling it well.
Are we going with Motorola?
No. Ashley Peachy, the materials management manager, is co-chairing the procurement stakeholders committee with Hetty Bonham, the procurement manager. This is to help align people's expectations and processes with the new Oracle system, NetSuites, and they're meeting every 2 weeks with all the stakeholders to maintain an avenue for clear communications, purchasing compliance, get stakeholders' input to the processes, and be educated on the NetSuite system. So they're doing a great job on that, and it's really exciting to see everybody pull together and work to make the process work for all involved. IT and Facilities Department worked on making this room better by having the audio-video vendor come in and set up the equipment. The original equipment that was in this room was from 2011, so we hope that we get that many years out of this set of equipment. Laserfish has a new employee member, Dwayne, and he had a previous record management experience, so he's helping Donna to identify and disposition Laserfish records that are beyond their retention date, as Randy said, to help clear out that retention and reduce the cost of our storage. And on the happiest note of my report, we've received the October and November $50,000 payments per our interlocal agreement with Montgomery County.
Good
so
deal.
They are coming Yay. In on time, and we don't see foresee any issues with that going forward. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Okay.
Got Addie?
Addie is unable to be here today. You have her report. It's a standard report, but there are a couple of things that I'd like y'all to be aware of. The members of the eligibility team made 4 visits to CHOP and under-over missions. They assisted 19 individuals with applications, and 14 were approved for HCAP benefits. That was in October. In November, they did 3 visits, helping 13 individuals with applications, and 9 were put on the program. So their outreach is paying off. They also have been working with individuals eligible for MD Anderson Patient Financial Assistance Services, and they have assisted 28 clients with applications to that program. So they're reaching out, they're helping people, and that brings joy to them. They like that much better than being in the office. They like to get out there and get with the people that they're helping. If you have any questions, I'll do my best to answer them.
I have some, but I'll ask her.
Mr. Allen?
Yes, sir. So the accounting department, as I told you last month, we did go live with the Oracle software. It has not been without its challenges. The accounting department's doing a great job troubleshooting that and identifying issues with the Oracle staff and working through those. Today, it kicked off a meeting to begin talking about fixed assets and the fixed asset module. And so that project will be going on over the next several months as that gets going. For fiscal year 2025, assets were calculated in the old system. And then, as Melissa said, the Procurement Stakeholders Committee has been meeting and working through process issues there and really trying to get it to work for everyone. So we're excited about that happening. And then I know that we just seem like we just finished budget, but this Friday we'll meet with Randy and start talking about budget timeline for next year and start laying out a good plan to accomplish that task for fiscal year 2027. Billing, this is going to be kind of the same old in terms of new software, working out processes and analyzing. It is being refined and the tune-up is getting finer and finer. When we review financials today for October, you'll see some impact there, and we'll talk about that and how that happens. Collections for September of this year were $2.6 million versus last year $2.125 million. And then for the month of October, collections were actually $158,000 less than last year. And the primary reason for that is the federal government shutdown, which began October 1st, and so that did impact payments. Happy to try to address any questions you might have.
Any questions? All right, we'll go on to, seems like a popular agenda item is number 8.
Make a motion to consider an act on wage and salary survey. The wages and salary increases does not include the medical directors and executive staff.
Okay. Second.
All right, got a second. Who wants to, anybody want to address it?
I'm going to give it a shot. Okay, I'm real quickly going to review. That's kind of small, but you guys have it on the screen, and also in your, you have a packet that has paper copies of this stuff below your computer. So a week or so ago, Emily and I developed a packet, well, quite some time ago, we developed a packet to send out to you guys to talk about notes for our 2025 salary survey. You know, why don't we do a survey for benchmarking for turnover to catch up with the market. And that's catching up with the market is our key concern here. The last salary survey that we did and market adjustment occurred in the fall of 18, and we implemented the salary adjustments in 2019. By rule, we have a rule that we do a salary survey at least each 3 years. This has been 6 years since we've actually done one. We had a little issue called COVID that came along and was a bump, so that's one excuse I'll use again. Also, after that, we did go from the 9-day shift rotation to debit day, and that was a cumbersome act. And the good thing there was that I felt very good that we went from 3 shifts to 4. I think that gives our EMS teams more time to rest and to have a family life at home. We also didn't reduce their pay, so effectively they didn't have to work as much, but the pay stayed the same. That's where we were, but the reason we're needing to do a salary survey is because we need to be competitive in our market. And we've done a good job of keeping up with inflation, as the information shows on the first page. But there's two things that affect us. You know, one is inflation. The other is competition for positions. And so in first responder and medical positions, ever since COVID, lots of people have left, and we've had a more difficult time filling our positions. Also, our competitors have been saying, what is MCHD paying? You know, and so we're doing leapfrogs. And so I really think that we've heard hue and cry from our staff saying, hey, guys, our competitors in the area are paying more. We need to take a serious look at that. So we have, and we'll discuss that briefly. So there's three things I'd like to do today. I'd like to talk about a salary adjustment for our first responders and also a salary adjustment for our support staff, because it has been a 6-year period of time. The second thing is, if we can approve a salary increase for our team, I would suggest also that we approve changing our pay scale. If we have a pay scale that's designed for each category of worker, and if we're going to increase the money that they're making, then I would suggest that we increase the bottom of the pay scale for each level type by that percentage. And then I also suggest that we increase the top level by 4%, which would represent 3% for an annual increase next year, plus a slight percentage over, so that we don't have to pay somebody a check for $5 because the 3% exceeds that rate. And then what I would suggest after that is that annually, while we're going through budget, we can look at the wage and salary scale each year and decide, do we need to make any adjustments or changes to the salary scale or the salaries within the scale. And I think it'd be a lot better if we're at least reviewing our wage and salary annually during budget time. We'll probably still occasionally have to have catch-up salary adjustments as we go through work years, but that will, I think, keep our scale more together and doesn't allow for drift. Okay? So I wanted to share some notes. You need to go down or up. Up. Oh, there's no notes in there. Okay.
Is it the one that says estimated budget impact?
Okay, I have a thing that says notes in the file, so, and I'll just read it real briefly.
Here it is.
So, obviously we mentioned just now we haven't made a pay adjustment since January of 2019. My next note is that MCHD has been very careful not to overly expand the non-field and non-alarm staff. I get comments about that quite frequently. Hey, Randy, we're busy. So in 2014, we had one non-field, non-alarm staff to every two EMS and alarm staff, OK? Okay, so we had a 2-to-1 working. In 2024, we have one non-field, one non-alarm staff to every 3.3 EMS and alarm staff. So we have expanded our non-field, non-alarm staff somewhat through the years, but my experience when I was working in corporate is that about every 5 or 6 years, middle management gets fat, and it happens because you plan on projects that don't work out, or you have somebody who does a really good job getting a project started, then they work 3 hours a day managing it, and they don't really have a lot to do with the other things. We try to make sure that we've kept all of our staff busy, not to the point of hurting them, but busy, so that we don't have those problems and have to look at layoffs for non-field staff. And as a result of that, we've also got people that do two or three pieces of jobs, which makes it difficult sometimes to compare job type to job type when we look at other industries. So the last thing I'd like to point out is that I think that we've been very efficient with our taxpayer money over the years. But if you look back 10 years, and I did this 14 to 24 instead of 14 to 25 because 25 years not closed out yet, but financially. But if you look at in 14, our tax revenue was about $29.2 million. And so I used a made-up unit of service metric. I took individual HCAP patients, which that year we had 1,558, plus EMS transports that year, which we had 29,045. And that worked out to tax revenue per unit of service of $956. In 2024, tax revenue was about $46.4 million. Our units of service for HCAP was 825 individual patients, plus EMS transports of 53,502, which works out to $855 per unit of service. So I think the board has been very good at keeping our tax rate in a good place, and I think we've been, you know, we certainly we're blessed to have all the things that we have to take care of patients, but we've been showing economies of scale as the scale has grown. So now we'll go to the original market survey ranking. And so what we did is we looked at our positions in EMS here, and we compared. We have a deputy chief position, we have district chief position, we have a captain position. And while we were looking, it looks like in some of the other organizations, captains probably do things that district chiefs do here, and maybe district chiefs do some things that deputy chiefs did there. So we tried to reorganize that so that it was as equal to equal as possible. But the district chief position, as you look down that list, and you can say, well, you know, we don't compete with these people, or we wouldn't compete with those people. But we, and Chief Campbell can address why we chose the different organizations that we chose. But if you look at where we are in the deputy chief position, we've always said that we like to be somewhere in the 75th percentile. We don't want to pay the highest because we don't want to, you know, we don't have somebody stuck in their work. But we want to pay people a very good wage to do what they do here because we have a very high standard of care and we do a very good job. And I think the payoff is we don't get lawsuits. We also do a very good job with service recovery. But we have an excellent team here and we want to appreciate them. So if we were to go to the 75th percentile, you look in the deputy chief's role, we're currently base pay is $102,000. The 75th percentile would be 106. For the district chief, our base pay is 93,000. 75th percentile is 98,000. For the captains, base pay for us is 76,000. The base is 92,000. And for in charges, we're 81. The 75th percentile is 86.8, almost 87. Attendant paramedics. We're at 67, the 75th percentile is 75.4. And I'll also say that I think that uh, there's, and then for the attendant AMTs, we only have a handful of attendant AMTs. Pardon? Two. We don't have a handful. We have two who currently work. We're low in that range. We pay $53,000. The 75th percentile is 65. AEMTs are basically, they can do IVs and give some meds. EMTs can be taught to do that if we need. Our service right now, I think we're looking, we need more EMTs so that we can get them trained to go through paramedic school. So our attendant basics, we're at 48.8. The 75th percentile is at 58. We had suggested maybe what might make sense with the attendant paramedics is to just move them into the attendant AMT range. That would increase their rate of pay. And even though we're paying low, when we're having a class for attendants, we're having over 100 to 150 applicants apply to go through school here. And one of the reasons they've done that is because they're hopeful of being able to get into the cohort and go through our training program. And the way we do that now is we hire them, we have them work with a paramedic on a truck for a period of time. They can start working on a double basic truck after they're experienced over a 6-month period of time. And then the best of those people go through cohorts. The others can also go to paramedic school online, and we'll pay 80% of that cost. So we have lots of people who want to come here because it's MCHD and they want to go through that training. That's where we are as we have tracked. Now, we looked at if we aligned MCHD and gave everybody a 3% increase, a 5% increase, or a 7% increase, where would that put us, align us to the 75th percentile? So that's the next slide. And let's actually go the slide behind that, because the first one is the 3% increase. And you can see there that we don't accomplish much there. The only group that reaches the 75th or gets close to the 75th percentile is nobody. But you can see how that compares. Then we looked at the 5% increase. And in the 5% increase, we're actually a little bit above with the deputy chiefs. And we're a little bit above, about $300 above with the district chiefs. But we're still not quite to 75% with the other ranges. And then finally, the 7% increase. And there, with the deputy chief, we're $3,000 above. With the district chief, we're about $1,000 above. With the captains, we're pretty much on the money. With the in charges, we're on the money. With attendant paramedics, we're still about $3,000 below. And with our attendant basics, we're still below. So I had talked about recommending an across-the-board 5% increase, but I'd recommend an across-the-board 7% increase for our medics. I'd like to stop for a moment, and Melissa, do you want to talk about the non-fielder? Would you like for me to do that? Okay.
This is our pay scale for non-field, and it's very cluttered up because I tried to get it all on two slides. So each bracket of the pay scale represents the people you see in the position column. The numbers across, like where it says 402, it says 93333.
Let me interrupt just for a minute. I'd like to start at the bottom, the low people, low-paid people, and work your way up, because for me, logically, that makes more sense. So start at the bottom of the back page. There's two pages there.
Okay. So where you see 101 in the gray bar, the two numbers next to it are the base of our current pay scale and the cap of our current pay scale. We compared the positions in that scale to Fort Bend, City of Houston, MCHD is in there, and ESD 11. To get those folks up to the 75th percentile, it would be a 6.5% increase from their current base pay. As you go up, you'll see those numbers in each column for each pay grade. So for 102, it's 8% to get them to the 75th. In 200, you'll see at the bottom position outliers. And we found that this with a lot of our tech positions, they're in the wrong pay grade for what technicians and radio techs, IT, fleet, mechanics, and such are. And so I did not include the comps for them in the calculation for that pay grade because it would have skewed the pay grade for everybody in it rather than just moving those up that are out of the pay scale. So for those that were light positions, it's a 3% increase to get those to the 75th percentile. Above that, there were no outliers, a 5% increase. 202, two outliers, mechanic 2, facilities tech 2. The remainder would need a 3% increase to reach the 75th percentile. 203, fleet specialist, facilities tech 3, senior AP, accounts payable clerk, and the laser fish specialist are all not within the ranges in that and would need to be moved to a different scale. The remainder would be a 1.5% increase to get to the 75th percentile. Moving on to the first page, pay scale 300, IT supervisor and HCAP case managers are out of range, so they were removed to be moved to another scale. The remainder would need a 7% increase to reach the 75th percentile. 301, a 6% increase. 302, CAD specialist was not within the range and would have skewed the others, so it was removed as an outlier. 5.7% for the rest to get to the 75th percentile. 400, billing manager, materials manager, and CAD administrator were not within the range. The rest would need a 10% increase. 401, an 11% increase. And 402, a 7% increase with the IT and radios not within the ranges. So that's the data we looked at. Robert Half, not as contracting through them, but they do a survey annually that looks at the new employee, the middle, and your high achieving employee. And I used as the base the new employee numbers from Robert Half for those scales. On some of them, you'll see it's averaged because there was maybe one with 70, one with 71, and one with 72 within that bracket. So I averaged those to the midline for Robert Half, and it'll say Robert Half average on those. So that's the raw data. I know that Ms. Williams had asked us as the HR chair to show it broken down by pay scale and positions, and this was our best effort. Emily did a lot of work gathering data, and I tried to compile it on one page.
So it looks like even with a 7% increase, you've got three categories, 102, 400, 401, that are still going to be below. So what is the resolution for that?
The upper ranges generally are promotions from within. So a promotion from within receives either the base of that pay grade or a 5% increase, whichever is higher. So those upper pay grades are not as worrisome as the lower ones that we're hiring in from the outside. Okay. So if you were going to adjust the numbers, I would lead stronger to the ones 300 and below.
So that would just leave at 7%, that would just leave 102 that's slightly below the 75th percentile, correct?
That's yes. Correct.
That would also be a nice adjustment for our people in the lower stages because they're the ones who really need it.
On the annual review of pay, what is the plan as far as getting this kind of data? First of all, how much of the data cost us to get to do an overall look at where we're competing? The main sheet about where we fall within the other counties and stuff. How much did that data cost to gather?
On my time.
The data doesn't cost us because we don't hire a data service. When I first got here, we hired a data service. We paid them $60,000, and we got nothing. The information was atrocious for a couple of reasons. It's easier to do on the non-field, you know, clerical and professional things, but for EMS, it's easier just to call other places, get information from the internet, and because they have to, we can request an open record. Everybody's pay here is public record, so we can request an open record and get information on pays.
So it didn't cost us anything.
Yeah. So it just costs work.
Yeah. So then I don't know how the board's going to feel, but it might be so that we don't fall too far below what the base is and that we stay close to the 75th. We may want to do a survey of salaries more frequently than we have been. I guess that's what I was trying to get to. So if it's not costing us anything, then that may be something you want to consider.
That's what he
my point. And so,
I didn't hear it.
And so, okay, so what I want to do in addition to this is, just like you see these, we keep everybody in a pay range so that we don't get paid too far out of whack.
Right
now our pay range needs to be adjusted. We'll adjust that and put the right people in the right places at this time. But when we go into budget time and we plan next year's budgets, we'll also at that time ask for at least 3% increase above the top of the pay range for each position so that we can go forward that year with pay increases. And then that way we can be aware of, are we slipping, and we can start doing a better check more frequently.
Okay.
We can add that to the budget workshops to discuss.
Okay, good.
So with all that information, which thank you, I know y'all worked hard on that. The recommendation is across the board 7%?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, we've already budgeted the 3%, so they're already getting automatically a 3% pay raise. So now we're going to add another 7% on top of it, just to make everybody aware. So they're basically looking at a 10% pay raise across the board.
That's right.
Any discussion?
But I think that should negate the need for us to do an adjustment for a considerable period of time.
I'd agree.
Yeah.
You know, we will never, ever be able to match everybody that's out there, especially the hospitals when they start hiring paramedics to do the jobs that they can't get nurses to do, or they can't hire nurses. We can't do that. I mean, when they were paying $1,200 a day, for people to come in and work.
I agree. I think that we need to build our own and compete with people that are in EMS.
Right.
We have to compete with the other CIFAR and other high payers to keep our people.
Ms. Williams, can I get you to
Yeah, that's what we were just talking about. Right. Yeah, we were just...
Okay.
I think we wanted to talk about it, and then we were going to figure out what we wanted to do, and we'll either restate or amend it. So you okay with amending the motion to say a 7% increase?
Yes, I would like to amend the motion to make it a 7% increase.
I'll second that.
Okay, so any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Can you add who is excluded, because you excluded?
Well, we just amended. We stated that in the original motion.
I stated
motion.
It, so I...
She just added
is
to the
Is that fine, Donna?
I mean, that might not be Robert's rule.
Donna said it's good.
Yeah. We get there. Okay.
I'm all in favor.
I said all in favor, didn't I?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I was talking when you were doing it again.
Okay.
All right.
So,
cool.
All right. Congratulations, guys.
I just, a note to the board. Big thanks for you guys. I think this is very expensive. It's not budgeted. It's a big adjustment. But it keeps us competitive where we don't slip. And I think that it's going to save us money and angst in the long term so that we can focus on mission. So thank you so much for doing
that. There's a lot of money spent on hiring and rehiring and rehiring if you can't retain
right.
people.
Turnover costs lots of money.
Yeah,
we don't want them to leave just because of salary. They should be leaving for other reasons, like better opportunities.
And they have been. I mean, our percentage is still around 20%.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, this this vote just was $3.3 million increase.
Annually.
Annually,
yes. 2.5 for this fiscal year.
For the 9 months.
Right.
I just wanted on record that it will be in going into effect January 11th, and they will see, employees will see it on the January 30th paycheck.
So when does it take effect? It takes effect on the 11th?
Yes, sir. January 11th, and then they will see it on the 30th paycheck.
Okay. All right, well, let's move on to item number 9.
Consider an act on district policy HR 25-508, district provided communication.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Number 10 is.
I think she might want to speak.
No, I didn't want to.
I was,
want to?
I was ready.
We
all read it, so
read
I didn't
it,
have
so.
Any questions.
Yeah. All right, number 10.
Consider an act on the purchase of 4 14-foot units from Fraser.
Second. Any discussion on that?
Okay. Just a quick note, I marked it as budgeted item, but it's actually $500 over budget per unit for a total over budget cost of $2,000.
I'm sorry, we can't approve it.
No. Who pocketed that?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The same guy that always.
Number 11.
Consider an act on the purchase of one additional Dodge 5500 chassis to replace shop 62.
Second.
And I believe this is just a replacement for the one that was wrecked.
Yes, sir.
And insurance will reimburse us for that.
Correct.
Mostly.
Okay. Any questions? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Number 12, Mr. Hudson.
Consider an act on a letter of intent for the purchase of 8 units from Fraser in fiscal year 2027.
Second.
I believe this one is just to get us in line.
Gets right. us in line and locks in the price, which are the two most important things
right.
when building okay. ambulances. Yes, sir.
Any discussions on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Number 13. All right. Oh, that I'll do that one. Make a motion we consider an act on the health care assistance program claims for non-medical 1115 waiver providers.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And then this one is consider an act on the ratification of voluntary contributions for uncompensated care to the Medicaid 1115 waiver of the health care assistance program claims.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Then we have the CFO report.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And so this first report is going to reflect the end of the fiscal year 2025, so September. And just as I do every year, I'd just like to mention that this is really a soft close. So the numbers here are still subject to recommended audit, journal entries, et cetera. And so just be aware that some of this stuff may be adjusted a little bit if the auditor suggests it and we agree. So in looking at cash investments at the end of September was $52,882,000, which was $5,123,000 more than last year. In terms of the income statement, you know, we've talked a lot about the details throughout the year, so I'm just going to hit the bottom line real quick, and that is revenue over expenses ended the year at $1,869,000 positive. That was up against a budget where we expected expenses to exceed revenue by $13,031,000. So as it stands, that shows us beating our budget by $14,900,000. As Paul Harvey would say, we need the rest of the story. And so when you look at that, we're going to talk about budget amendments in a minute and things which we budgeted in 2025, and many things we wrote purchase orders on, but we didn't actually receive the good or receive the service by the end of the fiscal year, so we couldn't accrue the expense. And so our budget amendment will request that we carry that over into the next year. So when we start adjusting that, kind of looking, well, what does 2025 look like? And so when we look at So just by moving $8,361,000 of expense into fiscal year 2026 because of timing, that then says that budgeted expenses over revenue is $6,539,000 rather than $13 million. And then you kind of look at what else is in there. And so payroll, which is very difficult for us to budget each year, just the algorithms extremely complicated in terms of the schedules, the things that we do, overtime, events, emergencies, FEMA-type emergencies, disasters. So payroll we beat by $2,175,000. Indigent care, so cost of care, the number of patients on the roll, and the fact that uncompensated care for the last 3 months is still accrued. We don't know what the actual is, and actuals have been coming in a little bit lower than expected for fiscal 25. That's $1,062,000. So that then says we're at $3,302,000 expenses greater than revenue. And then I'm going to take one more thing away, and that's revenue itself, where we exceeded expectations by almost $2 million, $1,978,000, where we got revenue we didn't expect to get, we didn't budget to get. So that says kind of right-sizing, I'm going to use the term normalizing, revenue over expense at $1,869,000 compared to a budgeted expense over revenue of $1,324,000. So it gets a lot closer when you really kind of start looking at what made that up and what are we doing, how are we handling it. But happy to try to address any questions because that's a lot of data.
Thanks. Explanation comes like, oh, we missed a bunch.
Yes, that I know gets your attention, it gets taxpayer attention, and so wanted to kind of get that explanation out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. You got the that's September. Don't you have October?
That was September. So agenda item 16, the October financials.
Okay, I thought you put them.
Sorry.
My mistake.
Cash investments at $50,660,000 compared to last year, $47,870,000. So $2,790,000 more. When we look at total revenue, it was $1,342,000 less than expected. So this is going to go back to the discussion I had, the implementation of our image trend billing system and fine-tuning what's happening there. And so the software is affording us great opportunity and benefit because we can automate a lot of things. Things that was used to really take a person to do and think and really do it, we can automate it and smooth this stuff. But we had a process, and that is our charity care write-offs, which were being indicated as charity care write-off, but they weren't actually being written off. And so it was overstating how much our receivable was, and it was also overstating what we were claiming as our EMS net revenue. And so just so you know, and I know this is basic, but I just kind of want to say it, just put everybody on the same playing field. When we show EMS net revenue on our income statement, that's an estimate, and it should be a pretty close estimate of how much cash we expect to collect. Well, if we're writing things off, charity care is supposed to be written off, then that's going to create a discrepancy. And so this kind of shows that correction so that and it's been corrected in the software, so it really is being written off. And so this kind of reflects that, and so we'll move forward from there. That's really the biggest thing other than capital. You can see that capital actual was $1,061,000 compared to budget of $5.3. I know you hear from me a lot. Timing is something we'll go back and touch base with some managers because we've got some key capital projects which ended up budgeted in October, which are really going to kind of take place throughout the year. And so we'll adjust that, but that was in capital and buildings, $1,850,000, radio capital equipment about $1.1 million, and various medical equipment, $557,000. So we'll look at that time, and we'll try to get that placed a little bit better. Still may not be perfect, but we'll explain those things as they come along. It won't all be in 1 month.
Still a work in progress.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions on that? All right. Then we'll go to number 17. Mr. Shirley?
Yes. Consider an act upon recommendation for amendment to the budget for fiscal year ending September 30th, 2025.
Second.
First and second, you want
to? Yes, sir. So this goes to speak to what we talked about when we looked at the September financial. And so moving $8,361,426 of expense due to timing from FY25 to FY26. Kind of gives you a pretty detailed list by account and notes there as to what it is. The decrease in expense, and then some reclassing of expense in the bottom there. Happy to address any questions you may have about this.
Any questions? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Number 18?
Yes, sir. And so this is a complimentary.
Wait.
Make a motion real quick.
I'm sorry.
Consider an act upon recommendation for amendments to the budget for the fiscal year ending September 30th. 2026.
Second. All right, we got first and second now.
Yes, sir. Thank you. So this is a complementary budget amendment. So this shows the fiscal 26 side of it where the budget is being increased. And so that same $8,361,426 of expense comes across. And then one additional item, and that is an amendment to reduce tax revenue, which reflects the actual rate which was adopted. And so that's $2,425,000. So for a total impact of an increase in net revenue over expense, decrease, $10,786,919. So the final budget would look like $12,797,801 in terms of revenue over expenses.
Yes. Revenue over expenses?
Yes. Expenses over revenue, okay. But it'll be
right.
Negative.
I want to make sure, yeah.
Yes,
negative.
Sir. Okay. So thank you for the clarification.
All
yes,
right.
Sir.
All right. Any other questions? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion carries. We'll go to number 19. Mr. Shirley.
All righty. Consider an act on the 2026 EMS fee schedule.
Second.
Got a first and a second.
Just a note. Every year, the Medicare fees change at or about October. And so what we've done for the last several years is our fee schedule is 200% of Medicare. So once Medicare publishes their new change for the next year, we adopt our new billing to take place in January.
Okay. All right. Do we have any questions? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Motion carries. Number 20, Mr. Shirley.
All righty, consider an act on payment of the district invoices. Total of the invoices, $2,894,435.49.
Second. Okay, we got first and second. Any big expenses in there?
We did buy receive two Fraser remounts, $627,650. I guess new modules, actually. Honeywell, the annual service agreement for our station alerting, $92,000. We've talked a lot about the Nutanix servers, so we got those $315,679, and then from Stryker, six PowerPro 2 COTS and two power loads, $275,326 for those.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. We'll go to number 21, salvage and surplus. Mr. Shirley.
Yeah, consider an act on the November-December 2025 salvage and surplus report.
Second.
All right, got first and second. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Then we go to 22 minutes.
Make a motion that we consider an act on the secretary's report from the October 28, 2025 meeting.
Second.
We accept them.
All right, got a motion, got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. All right, we're going to convene into executive session. as authorized by the Texas Open Meeting Act, to deliberate in closed session on the following matters authorized under Texas Open Meeting Act in regards to Section 551.072 of the Texas Government Code for deliberation about real estate property, and under 551.071 to receive legal advice both regarding property in 200 South Kennedy, Willis, Texas, and other comparable properties. We're going to move into executive session at 5 o'clock.